Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, Fasta Maya, good evening. Welcome to Update here on Manx Radio, a rundown of the day's main news. So coming up in the next half hour, people who took part in a government consultation have spoken out against the idea of an NHS levy. We're going to bring you a full breakdown of those responses. We're also going to be looking at greenwashing. What does it mean and what's in the new guidance that's just been published by the Financial Services Authority? We'll catch up on what's been happening at Cyber Isle, which took place at the Comus Hotel today, and also find out later how much money's been raised this year for the Great North Air Ambulance. All that, the weather, the traffic and the travel as well. And as ever, you're more than welcome to get in touch. You can email studio@manxradio.com or text 166177. We'll start with the main news headlines with Siobhan Fastamai.
Fastamai. Manx Utilities says it's carried out a full clean at St John's Sewage Works, which had been causing issues with grey water in the River Neb. Following an investigation, the authority found issues with an old filter bed system, which is due to be upgraded as quickly as possible. A notable segment of respondents to a government consultation rejected the idea of a proposed NHS levy. That's from the Treasury Minister, who's published a breakdown of the responses to the consultation online. One person has stepped forward to fill the vacant seat on Douglas Council's central ward. Charlotte Traynor will take on the position following an uncontested election in the capital. Port Erin Commissioners says it's been given approval by Treasury to upgrade the last of its ageing street lighting stock. It will cost the local authority £215,000, which it confirmed was budgeted for back in February. Here's Chair Hannah McKenzie.
We were very keen to continue with our biosphere and incorporate the dark sky scheme.
And Manx actress Samantha Barks is to star in a stage version of the 2017 smash hit film The Greatest Showman. It's to have its world premiere at the Bristol Hippodrome, running from the 15th of March to the 10th of May next year. Further afield, the UK has announced sanctions aimed at Russia's two biggest oil companies and its shadow fleet of tankers. Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper's told the Commons Russia won't be allowed to escalate its war with Ukraine.
Now is the time not just to continue with our steadfast support for Ukraine's defence, but to substantially increase the pressure on Russia's economy and on Putin's war machine.
A former funeral director has pleaded guilty to dozens of fraud charges after an investigation into human remains found at his premises in Hull. The UK Prime Minister says the government will publish the witness statement it provided as part of the collapsed China spy trial. And Wales's greatest ever female player will retire from international football later this month. Jess Fishlock will gain her 166th and final cap in a friendly against Australia. There are your headlines. I'll have your news at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Siobhan. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. It's just a little bit grey, isn't it? Overcast but dry this evening. Light and variable winds. Overnight temperatures will be around 10. And then again tomorrow, cloudy but mainly dry. Light winds, top temperatures of 13. And similar conditions on Friday before those winds start to strengthen during Saturday. So that's something to look forward to. Sunset this evening, 6:22. Sunrise tomorrow morning, 7:47.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674573 or visit the showroom on the Snugbra Trading Estate.
At Zed's Bedding, we know spills, pets and kids can be tough on mattresses. Our waterproof or quilted protectors shield against everyday mess while adding comfort. Simple, effective mattress protection. Clean, fresh and longer lasting. At Zed's Bedding Ramsey.
If you run a small business or just need more room in the back, Dillshaw Vehicles has the perfect van or light commercial for all your needs and can sort out any finance. Based in the Tremode Estate, view dillshawvehicles.im or call 49 51 49.
Visit Ramsey Art Gallery for a fabulous range of top brand watches and stunning gold and silver jewellery, gifts for all occasions and of course our gallery of prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery Jewellers and Engravers opposite the RNLI shop.
Cork Hill Storage. Call Cork Hill Removals and Storage today. We'll store your goods day after day. Safe and secure around the clock. When it comes to storage, we do the lots. Click CorkHillRemovals.com.
You're listening to Update here on Manx Radio. It's just coming up to 5 past 5. Lovely to have your company this evening. Hope you've had a good day. A notable segment of respondents to a government consultation rejected the idea of a proposed NHS levy. Now, that's come from the Treasury Minister, who's published a breakdown of the responses to that consultation that was online. Siobhan has the details for us.
The plans were scrapped in September, with Alex Allinson saying the consultation was useful in clarifying public thinking. The NHS levy consultation launched on the 27th of March 2025 and closed on the 18th of June, with 3,809 responses received, 23 of which were from organisations. The published document now reveals that those in opposition cited concerns about perceived government inefficiency and the adequacy of existing tax systems. Many called for a system reform, cost-cutting from healthcare management and the wider public service, or increasing income tax instead. Whilst the consultation did not include a question on overall agreement with the levy, Treasury says it was clear from the consultation that many responses were based on the assumption that it would be introduced, despite the fact that they did not agree with the overall principle. Key conclusions from the responses included only 21% of respondents agreed that the levy should only apply to individuals who are classed as resident for tax purposes. A large number of comments discussed the fairness of the levy, including its possible impact on vulnerable groups, pensioners and low-income individuals, and advocated for exemptions or alternative taxation methods, whilst a similarly large number expressed general dissatisfaction with government performance in general. Many called for reforms and better financial accountability before implementing a levy. There were also concerns about the broader implications of the levy, including potential negative consequences such as discouraging young residents, reducing the island's attractiveness, and increasing administrative burdens. Over 60% of respondents agreed that there should be a levy-free amount similar to the current income tax personal allowance.
Siobhan reporting on the responses to that government consultation which rejected the idea of a proposed NHS levy. As always, much more in this story and a link to the response document as at manxradio.com. Coming up to 5 past 5, and something that it seems we're very often reporting on is dog attacks on livestock. And there has been another incident, this time in Andreas, where a large dog is said to have attacked a flock of sheep near the Oatlands Road, leaving two of the animals dead. Recently, the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture told us it's committed to ensuring people responsible for attacks on livestock are held to account. And for Sarah Comish, who's the General Secretary of the Manx National Farmers Union, new law can't come soon enough.
I go back a couple of years when we started a bit of a campaign to improve the legislation that currently exists. And really, we kind of modelled that on the existing Scottish legislation that was brought in quite a few years ago to improve both the police and the law's ability to investigate and prosecute, which seemed a little bit more robust. It's always going to be a very difficult situation for people to manage. But at the moment, with our current legislation, it's very difficult for the police or the judicial system to make a prosecution. And so we wanted to improve that. So we did quite a bit of work with the animal health team, with the police, with our membership, both doing research and constructing a proposal about updating the legislation by utilising the existing Animal Welfare Act, which has most things covered apart from livestock attacks by dogs. So it is possible to have that as secondary legislation within that act, which would certainly improve the powers of prosecution, but also hopefully be a much better deterrent for people. Unfortunately, last spring, we had another department meeting and were told at that meeting that the department weren't going to progress a bill as we'd agreed what it would look like, but they weren't going to progress it.
That's the General Secretary of the Manx National Farmers Union, Sarah Comish, there. Well, in response to that, the Department for Environment says the island does have legislation in place that provides powers for the police to investigate and take enforcement action. However, ongoing conversations with the MNFU have led to the department committing in its department plan to consult on the matter of sheep worrying. It's important, this statement goes on to say, that we are confident we are doing all we can to prevent and prosecute attacks of this nature. Livestock is a shared responsibility, and we remain committed to working with the farming community, police and other partners to ensure those responsible for these attacks are held to account. It's coming up to 5:10. Now, the growing threat of greenwashing is the subject of new guidance notes which have been published by the Financial Services Authority. And the FSA is looking to raise awareness within the island's regulated sector of consumer protection risks that are related to this practice. So the big question then, what is greenwashing? Well, Simon Richardson has been finding out from Adam Creemore, who's the Sustainable Finance and ESG Advisor with the FSA.
Greenwashing, it's a term that's used to talk about usually businesses misleading their customers. That can sometimes be through sort of an outright lie, you know, just saying something that's completely untrue. Or often it can just be a little bit of an exaggeration of the truth, you know, something like selling an appliance saying it's made from recycled materials when really it's only the box, you know.
And is this on the rise, I suppose, given the growing emphasis people put on sustainability?
Globally, definitely. You know, there's a lot more cases of greenwashing, a lot more cases of business getting into hot water, either for green or other sustainability-based claims or adverts that don't hold water. Locally, it's a little bit different. This guidance note, it's intended to make sure businesses are doing what they need to do, understand what they need to do, ahead of more products, more opportunities in the sustainable finance space. You know, as they become more popular with Finance Isle of Man Sustainable Finance Project, what we want to make sure is that, you know, the guidance is there, the understanding is there within industry so that they can avoid going wrong in the future. We don't think it's a big problem at the moment on Ireland, but if it means that there's a business or two out there that, you know, reconsiders some of the things they put in advertising or whatever, that's, you know, that's only a good thing.
What effect can it have on companies if they actually fall victim to a greenwashing exercise? Presumably, there could be, substantial reputational damage.
Yeah, exactly. So the biggest risk really for a business is the loss of confidence from their customers. You know, nobody wants to be lied to or feel they've been taken advantage of. So if a business is doing greenwashing and that makes its way into the press, you know, a business could lose a lot of customers or, you know, a lot of goodwill from customers and the wider public. You know, a regulated financial service business has obligations in terms of conduct and marketing. And so, you know, from our perspective at the authority, we think that firms need to consider the expectations on them in terms of how they make green or other sustainability based claims. But I guess the key thing to say is this isn't about trying to put people off having sustainable products. It's a recognition of the need to make sure that when they're talking about those, they're doing that based on good information. They aren't misleading consumers.
That's Adam Creemore from the Financial Services Authority talking to Simon Richardson. 5:12. Some news from down south now. Port Erin commissioners say they've been given approval by Treasury to upgrade the last of their ageing street lighting stock. It's going to cost the local authority £215,000, which it confirmed was budgeted for in February, and believes the scheme will become cost neutral. Now, the chair of the commissioners, Hannah McKenzie, says the project will see 294 lights replaced with LEDs. Some will have new columns, and decorative lighting has also been included in the costings.
Streetlights historically in Port Erin have been, well, they've been ageing. We've had sodium lights in various places and we've been replacing them as and when they need replacing. Earlier in the year, well, last year, the board budgeted to replace the whole streetlights that were left remaining needed to be done with LEDs. So ultimately, we have got 294 replacement lights. Some will include columns, some will just be the lights. We've also put into the scheme some decorative lighting to match the lower promenade on the upper promenade. And we've got a little bit of festoon lighting as well that will stretch out from the lower prom along towards the cozy nook. So part of this incentive, this scheme, we were very keen to continue with our biosphere and incorporate the dark sky scheme. So we've actually now, every light when this project is complete will conform and will be dark sky compliant, which, I mean, we think that's great. But there's another bonus to that. Because every light will be LED, it will actually mean that the project, although we've taken it's a capital scheme, it will be actually become cost neutral. So the cost that we're saving from the LED bulbs will obviously offset the cost of the petition that we've put to Treasury. So I think from a ratepayer's point of view, it's really good. From a biosphere point of view, it's really good. And yeah, I'm just really proud to be part of a very forward-thinking, forward-acting board in Port Erin.
That's Chair of Port Erin Commissioners, Hannah McKenzie.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside Tyres and Service Centre.
All okay on the roads as far as the police are concerned, which is always good news. The main things that were there this morning, those traffic lights in the areas you know about, are still likely to be there on your way home. Looking forward to the Mountain Road reopening on Monday. All good down at the airport and at the steam packet as well. The Manxman due into Douglas Harbour in just around 15 minutes or so, heading out again for Heysham at 7:15.
Ask how you can spread the cost interest free at Quayside.
It's just coming up to 5:15, and it's now 6 years since more than 60 properties in Laxey were substantially damaged by floodwater. More than 100 millimetres of rain fell on the village during a 24-hour period on the 1st of October 2019, causing the Laxey River to burst its banks, sending a huge volume of fast-running water along Glen Road. Now, 6 years on, more than £7 million has been spent on flood defences in and around the village, which certainly proved their worth during recent heavy rainfall, which was brought by Storm Amy. Garth MHK Andrew Smith has been talking to Simon and said the people of the village can feel comforted by the work that's been done since 2019, adding that the problems surrounding home insurance, though, in the wake of the flood, appear to be receding.
Yeah, I think that is the case, and I can speak from personal experience in that I've been with one of the Royal Sun and Sun Alliance companies for a number of years more than, and out of the blue, and this was no reflection on the flooding events that I'd experienced, and obviously I'd had floods in Laxey in my house from the river in 2002, 2015 and 2019. So this letter came out and just said that, and as I say, this was no reflection on what had happened in my property previously, just said that More Than is no longer selling home insurance. So obviously that threw me into a bit of a quandary, because obviously I'd heard all these various stories from residents on the Glen Road as to issues and difficulties with insurance. So I've been able to test my own case, as it were, and I literally walked down the street in Douglas and called into an insurance company, and I thought that the first test would be to give them the postcode, and I duly gave them the IM47AJ postcode, expecting them to throw their hands in the air and gasp, but nothing happened. And the premium is not far different, recognising that with inflation and the increase in both buildings and contents cover, not far different than what I was playing with More Than for all those years previous to this new policy.
That's a Garth MHK Andrew Smith there with some positive news about insurance in Laxey following those floods in 2019. 17 minutes past five. Well, the Isle of Man's annual cyber security conference, Cyber Isle, has been taking place today. This year, focusing on resilience. Well, Christian's been at the event all day. Joins us now, fresh from the Comus Hotel. Fastamai, Christian. Just give us an overview, first of all, of some of the main talking points of the day.
Yeah, Fastamai, Beth. So the conference, like you say, is just drawn to a close and brought together some leading experts from the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre, part of GCHQ, alongside other national security officials, all the way through to some bosses of major international tech firms. And it's hosted by the Isle of Man Cybersecurity Centre. Like you said, the focus this year is resilience, aiming to strengthen awareness, collaboration and preparedness against some of the growing cyber threats.
And there were various keynote speeches throughout the day. Anything that stuck out for you?
Yeah, I mean, a few things, actually. Justice and Home Affairs Minister Jane Paul Wilson, she opened the conference by warning that the Isle of Man is not immune to cybercrime. She also said that more than £2 million was lost to scams on the island last year, though the real figure is likely higher. She also confirmed that work is underway on a national infrastructure security bill, which would require key services to put specific security measures in place, and a consultation on that is expected soon.
And there has been input from GCHQ as well, I understand.
Yeah, indeed. One of the keynote speakers is from a division of GCHQ. GCHQ is effectively, in essence, the UK government's cybersecurity equivalent of MI6. Think of it like that. I'm obviously not going to disclose their identity for obvious reasons. So for the purposes of this, I'll just call them Alex. And Alex described the current threat landscape as unpredictable, fast-changing and increasingly complex. They identified identified Russia, China, North Korea and Iran as major state-based cyber threats, saying Russia is motivated, capable and reckless, and that both North Korea and Iran continue to conduct espionage to essentially offset sanctions. They warned criminal groups remain driven by profit and are increasingly targeting supply chains, which we can already see reflected by some of the events in the UK, like the Jaguar Land Rover.
Artificial intelligence, I'm guessing, was presumably a big talking point as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Alex said AI is likely to make cyber attacks faster and harder to defend against, but also highlighted that used responsibly, it can strengthen cyber resilience by automating threat detection. They also ended with a clear message saying some of us will face a cyber threat in the next 12 months. That's inevitable. But the key message from what we learned today was how important it was to work together. One of the quote from one of the speakers today was, criminals will thank us if we don't.
Wise words there. Christian, thank you so much. Christian was down at Cyber Isle at the Comus Hotel all day today. 5:20. Now, we've been hearing a lot about motor neuron disease this week after the former England rugby captain Lewis Moody announced his diagnosis. And tomorrow night, there's a talk taking place here on the Isle of Man, hoping to highlight that hope is on the horizon when it comes to the future of treating this condition. It's being hosted by the Isle of Man branch of the Motor Neuron Disease Association. The talk will be given by Dr. Brian Dickey. He's the charity's chief scientist and has been talking to Amy.
Motor neurons are the nerves that basically connect the old grey matter in our brain and our spinal cord to the muscles and the various parts of the body and help us to convert thought into action. And in motor neuron disease, those nerves, those wires start to degenerate. And this means that a person can become progressively weak. They lose the ability to control their muscles waste. And it affects a person's ability to walk, to talk, to feed themselves. And eventually it will affect the respiratory muscles as well. 50% of people will sadly die within 2 years of diagnosis. There are exceptions, of course, Stephen Hawking being probably the best known example, who lived for over 50 years with this disease. And it's actually one of the key research questions is, what is it that in these people that maybe helps protect against this disease, doesn't stop it, but helps to slow it down? And if we could understand that, it would give us a route, hopefully, into developing treatments.
We have had a number of high profile people being diagnosed with it. Stephen Hawking, as you mentioned, in the last week, Lewis Moody, the former England rugby captain. What does that do in terms of raising awareness of the disease?
Yes, people like Doddy Weir, Rob Burrow, Kevin Sinfield, of course, really do raise the profile, and they've helped the charities to make a nuisance of ourselves with the UK government, I guess. And we managed to get the UK government 2 or 3 years ago to commit to funding more MND research.
That is Dr. Brian Dickey. He is the chief scientist of the Motor Neuron Disease Association charity. That talk is taking place tomorrow night, and you can find all the details on the Manx Radio website. 5:22. Well, the chief executive officer of the Great North Air Ambulance says the charity has raised £95,000 since the start of fundraising. That total was revealed earlier today as the charity received a donation of £10,000 from the International Financial Group Limited. Joe Garcia and IFGL CEO Rob Allen say the funds will be able to help the service that supports care and welfare for people here on the island, and they've been talking to Chanel.
GNS, I think, is really important to us as sort of proud Manx company to support a service that is so critical in supporting the kind of care and welfare of people here on the island.
We're hugely proud to be chosen as a partner to partner with IFGL, and the donation that's been received will be a huge benefit in supporting the service that we provide here to the Manx community.
How beneficial, I know you said it will provide a benefit, but how beneficial will it be? I know the last time we spoke, I think it was in July, I think you said at the time in 4 months, Isle of Man residents had raised about £54,000 for the organisation?
That's absolutely right, well remembered. And the total now is £95,000. So we're well on the way to receiving the donations necessary to maintain our critical equipment to fly over water to the community on the Isle of Man. And that means that anything we raise over and above that target will go to reducing the Manx care costs. So what's donated on the island will remain on the island.
And I know you've also been on the island having some talks with some officials. Would you be able to tell us anything there?
going to meet Teresa Cope, CEO for Manx Care, this afternoon. So I can't preempt what that discussion might include.
Now, Rob, coming back to you now, same question as I asked Joe, you know, how beneficial is this funding for this organisation or for this charity and the work it does?
Yeah, we hope very beneficial, obviously. It's a large commitment from us. We think it's, you know, clearly very well deserved. Yeah, and it's very important to us, as I say, as kind of proud corporate citizens here on the island, and also really important to our staff. And we've had really lovely reaction from our team here on the island in terms of how proud they feel to be supporting such a great charity.
From myself, you know, the Great North Air Ambulance Service, the whole team are hugely grateful for the support provided to our charity from the community on the Isle of Man.
That's some lovely news from earlier today. You can find out more on the Manx Radio website. That was Chanel talking to Joe Garcia and Rob Allen there. Now, I mentioned that talk about motor neuron disease that's taking place tomorrow. I just want to give you the details of that. It's starting at 7 p.m. at St. John's Church Hall. So do go along to there if you have any interest in that at all. It'll be a really inspiring talk, I think. At 25 past five, speaking of inspiring, Rob Pritchard, good evening.
Fast am I. First off this evening, following the announcement this week of Ian Locker's retirement from racing, more organisations have been paying tribute to his career. Well, after making his Snaefell Mountain Course debut in 1983, he's gone on to take 10 TT victories, 29 podiums and 103 finishes. Well, the Manx Grand Prix is wishing Locker well for the future, describing him as a mountain course legend. It was at that event in 1983 he made his maiden appearance, finishing third in the 350cc newcomers race, only behind Robert Dunlop and Steve Hislop. Elsewhere, also paying homage to Locker's legacy is the Southern 100 Road Races on the Balloon Course, where he is the second most successful rider in the event's history with 40 race wins, including 5 solo championships. The Southern 100 Club says his contribution to the event and wider racing community is immeasurable, adding his consistency, professionalism and sportsmanship have set a standard for future generations to follow. Whilst Locker's racing days may be over, he is expected to be back on Ireland next year as team owner of Team ILR Racing. In athletics, we heard earlier this week about the Isle of Man successes in the Chicago Marathon, but there were also some impressive displays by Manx competitors at the Manchester Half Marathon on Sunday the 12th of October. Corin Leeming and Emily Milchreist were among the standouts, with Leeming the highest male and overall finisher from the Isle of Man in 13th in a time of 1 hour 5 minutes and 18 seconds. Meanwhile, Milchreist shattered her previous best over the distance by nearly 5 minutes, clocking 1 hour 22 minutes and 26 seconds to finish 50th in the women's race. More generally, there were no fewer than 11 local athletes overall involved, which also included Paul Sykes, Rory Dearden, Nick Kane, Ryan Hampson, Andrew Faulkner, Gaz Notman, Callum Staley, Kevin Sloan and Sarah Eyre. And in cycling, Manx Pro riders Lizzie Holden and Max Walker have been out in China today, competing on the respective second stages of the Tour of Chongming Island and Tour of Guangxi. It was a good day for Holden and Team UAE ADQ as her teammate Sophie Van Ruyen took the stage win. Separately, Holden announced yesterday she'll be retiring from the sport at the end of the season. Meanwhile, on the Tour of Guangxi, Walker's EF Education EasyPost teammate Marin van den Berg managed the squad's highest individual finish of 12th.
Thank you very much indeed, Rob. Yeah, just thinking about Ian Locker, obviously the ILR racing team was at MGP. I think Craig Kennelly was one of their riders, the MGP newcomer this year. It can be really weird, though, to think of an MGP or a TT without Ian Locker actually riding, isn't it?
He's just been a synonymous name and, you know, as has been pointed out, 42 years of racing as well. And you think of some of the names he's raced alongside, competed against as well. He's right in that top bracket in so many people's eyes, isn't he, about what he's achieved on the mountain course and, of course, in wider racing in general. So we're no doubt he'll be missed in the long run from the racing side of things, but we are expecting him back next year as team owner.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely seen as a legend and for very good reason. Thank you very much indeed, Rob. That is all from Update this evening. Coming up next, it's Spotlight with Howard Kane. That series brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council. Greatest Hits End with Michelle from 6, Country Roads with Andy from 9, and Dave Moore will be with you from 10 with After Hours. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. We'll